Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now we're going to talk with Lieutenant Colonel Scott Mann to get an update on the emerging threat of ISIS. Mr. Mann is a retired Green Beret, Lieutenant Colonel with 23 years in the U.S. Army, and also 18 years of those 23 years in Special Forces. And you, Scott, welcome to the program. You have founded something called the Stability Institute, and you feel you have something to say about how we should deal with the threat of ISIS as citizens. Can you explain that?
Yeah, thanks. Well, first of all, thanks for having me on. It's really great to be here.
Sure.
The Stability Institute, I founded this nonprofit really right after I retired from the Army a couple of years ago. And the reason that I founded it was because late in the Afghan War, Special Forces, or Green Berets in particular, realized that for about a decade, what we had been focused on was essentially manhunting. And that's really not an effective way to defeat ISIS or Al-Qaeda or any of these groups. You have to do some of that. What really works is to go into the local villages where these guys set up shop and work with those tribes and clans who are trying to resist. We found that in very short order, that was a really effective way to go. So the Institute it exists to share that knowledge with practitioners and American citizens on how to do that in places beyond Afghanistan, like Iraq and Syria, Africa, even here at home.
Okay, I actually missed the core word of what you said. You said we focused on such and such, and instead your goal was to, in a sense, win the hearts and minds of the people and the villagers.
Yeah, so we focus on the elements of local stability. We focus on the things that help people in the rural villages, tribes, and clans where ISIS and Al-Qaeda set up shop. We help them stand up against these folks. And the Institute exists to share those best practices on that approach.
Okay, StabilityInstitute.com for more information. Okay, so explain about ISIS in terms of their use of social media. Obviously, it's been very effective.
Yeah, so ISIS, you know, really the first thing that I think your listeners need to understand is that they are ideologically committed to an end-of-day scenario where they usher in the apocalypse, Judgment Day, and they believe it's their place on Earth to do that. And they're manufacturing a holy war, essentially, between them and the Crusaders, and that's us, to fight a set piece battle in Syria that ushers in that apocalypse. And they are recruiting based off that. They are painting these myth entrepreneurs, propagandists, are painting this picture of a utopia that, frankly, you know, we know doesn't exist, but it's drawing people in, and they're using social media to do it. It's very compelling and very powerful.
You know, I think it might be good to back off or back up a little bit and explain a little bit of Islamic theology when it comes to the apocalypse.
Please go ahead.
After you, and by the way, just to clarify things, I didn't know this until I studied the Greek New Testament. The word apocalypse just simply means unveiling. It means revelation. So the last book of the Bible in the New Testament is often called the revelation of John, or the revelation of Jesus Christ as given to John. But it's also sometimes called the apocalypse. And it's just one and same word, revelation.
Right. And isn't it interesting that apocalypse has come to, you know, really has come to have a very dark connotation.
Yeah, like cataclysm or something.
Absolutely. At end of days scenario and all of that. But you know, in this scenario, these Islamist radicals are committed to being to fulfilling a medieval Islamist prophecy that revelations would occur, and that it would be in a set piece battle where jihadists were fighting in Syria against Christian crusaders, and in the very final moments of that battle, the prophet would return and judgment would be rendered, so there are a range of, from the Iranian mullahs to Al-Qaeda to ISIS, who believe in this, and a caliphate is necessary to usher this in. There's a range of people who believe that, but the difference is ISIS is ideologically committed to doing it right now. And so I'll pause for comment there, and then I would just like to add one more thing, if I could.
Sure. Does it mention, I mean, does, I must confess, I'm not, you know, as well versed on Islamic theology as you are. Does Islamic theology mention Syria by name as the place of Armageddon, if you will? And by the way, in the biblical revelation, Harmageddo, which is Armageddon, you know, that's where we get that word. That's in Israel, that is north of Jerusalem. But does it mention Syria by name in Islamic prophecies?
Yeah, it does. And even the town in Syria is mentioned, and it escapes me right now. But
wow.
And I'm not a theologian, by the way, in Islam, but our institute is populated with a range of experts on the topic, and I've spent a lot of time looking at this with them.
But Syria by name, that is absolutely fascinating, because it shows you how important it is that civil war end pretty soon.
It does. And
the right way.
Shows you that what ISIS is doing right now, there are no surprises. They are following what they believe to be the prophecy of this revelation, and they believe they are in lockstep with how this is supposed to play out. Even, I believe, Jerry, even how they beheaded the 21 Coptic Christians on the beach of Libya, I believe, and so do a lot of others, that is a degree of collective symbolism to show we're on the shores of Europe and we're coming, the same way that the 7th century expansion moved into Europe as well. This is there are not a lot of secrets in how they are strategically expanding.
Mm-hmm. All right. Just one quick question again about Islamic theology, if you don't mind, and that is, do the Shiites agree with this version in that Armageddon or the last battle will be in Syria?
Well, the Shiites do agree with the version of Armageddon. There are some discrepancies on exactly how it occurs, but they do believe that an end of days battle will occur. The
Mahdi, in Syria.
That one escapes me.
Okay.
I'll have to go back and check on that
one. All right. I mean, this is very important, because I had not realized the Syrian angle to all this, because let's face it, ISIS begins in Syria. In fact, the S in ISIS, the second S, is Syria.
Absolutely. And it is an extreme, and in fact, very few people paid attention to it, but in 2014, they tore down the barriers between Iraq and Syria and declared the Sykes-Picot treaty null and void. And this, of course, was the treaty that followed Lawrence of Arabia's time in World War I. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on here that I think just people are, you know, not that they're not paying attention to it, but it just doesn't get covered.
Yeah.
You know, but yes, the Shia do believe a version of this, but there are some distinct discrepancies on how the Sunni and the Shia seed is playing out, but both are ideologically committed to ushering it in.
All right. Now, for much of Islam's existence, there was such a thing as a caliphate, and that was disbanded in the 1920s after the fall of the Ottoman Turk, and there were always some who wanted to see a return to the caliphate. Now, Mr. al-Baghdadi, who is the leader of ISIS, has said, the caliphate's returned, and I am the caliph. Explain the significance of that.
Well, it's very significant in the sense that you can't achieve the revelation or the end of days event that is necessary without the caliphate and without the caliph, and that there is you know, it is the catalyst. It is the geographic catalyst which brings this war to bear, and you know, the caliph is the physical, the human catalyst that leads it, and you know, he is under actually a lot of pressure from those under him to continue to aggressively push this forward. And here's the thing. You hear a lot of pundits on the news today talking about, well, you know, ISIS can't govern, the caliphate can't stand. They're really missing the point here. This is a narrative that is tied strongly to history, and it is ringing true throughout the Islamic world. And when they see this self-proclaimed caliphate out there still existing, still struggling, people are flocking to that. And here we are pontificating on whether or not they can govern, and we're missing it. This is a strategic narrative that has reach that we don't even fathom.
How do we explain all these young people leaving Europe, leaving the United States, and, you know, trying to join ISIS?
Well, there's a lot of dimensions to this. First of all, I'm concerned that we're not talking enough about narrative and story. In my book, Game Changers, that's coming out on Memorial Day, I have a whole chapter in there on the power of narrative and story and what a critical role it plays in this particular situation. I mean, how did the Nazis convince, you know, a modern nation state to slaughter 6 million Jews?
And 6 to 11 million Gentiles who were, you know, deemed inferior, including a lot of Christians who opposed all this.
Absolutely. And there is, you know, one of our experts at the Institute calls them myth entrepreneurs, but they're really propagandists who understand the elements of neuroscience, honor and shame, marginalization, human dynamics, and they exploit it. They go into these marginalized areas, whether it's the inner cities of, you know, San Diego or, Pashtun tribes beyond the reach of the Afghan state, and they exploit the honor shame dynamic, revenge, blood feud, and they mobilize that within the context of this larger narrative, and it works. It brings people in.
Hmm. What are your thoughts when you say all this? What are your thoughts on that remark from somebody from the Obama administration, from the State Department a few weeks ago, who was saying, oh, well, the real ultimate way to fight all these Islamic extremists, well, they didn't use that word, religious extremists, is through poverty programs and, you know, that kind of thing?
I don't buy that as a singular solution. Look, I will tell you, we did work in the rural villages of Afghanistan that my book Game Changers talks about, and what we learned in these areas that are beyond the reach of these governments is that clan and tribal society normally handled their own affairs, and they kept these extremists out of these areas. They were antibodies. They weren't, you know, in line with our views, but they don't like extremism. Those areas are so degraded that they have simmering grievances like, you know, food insecurity and agricultural shortfalls, and those are exploited by the bad guys. Mm. But the key is you can't address those things until you have security, until you get in locally and push those guys out of there. Then you can start to address things like, you know, jobs in the inner city where gang members are radicalized. But it is not the singular solution, and you cannot lead with that. It won't work.
All right, we're talking right now with retired Green Beret Lieutenant Colonel Scott Mann with 23 years experience in the U.S. Army. His website that you can learn more about what he's doing is called StabilityInstitute.com. And we're talking about the crisis of ISIS. And how about a comment about ISIS's use of social media?
They are running circles around us, aren't they? If you compare the number of hits and likes that they get versus, you know, the State Department site, it's not real favorable. They are really good at it. In fact, I was just sitting here talking to one of our contributors at the Institute who really specializes in social media and stuff. His name is Zach Badorf out of New York, and he was saying that the amount of recruits who have expertise in social media is staggering. They look for it in how they recruit their folks, and they put it into everything they do. They decentralize it, and they emphasize it. We don't really do that, do we? I mean, we're very layered, very hierarchical. I can remember in Afghanistan when the Taliban would commit an atrocity like bombing a market. It would take us 48 hours to even get permission from our higher headquarters to release a story on that, and by then, the myth entrepreneurs had already pinned it on us, and it was long since gone.
Hmm. Interesting. So what is the overall narrative here? What is the narrative that ISIS is trying to foist on the world?
Yeah, so the big narrative that not just ISIS, but all of your violent extremist groups, all of your Islamist violent extremist groups that plays very strongly, is that Islam is under attack by the West, and that it is the duty of every Muslim to defend it. That, you know, that is a pervasive narrative that they're putting out there, followed shortly by the return of the caliphate is here, and it is your duty to help usher it in. And that is a fairly new addition to the narrative in the sense that, you know, bin Laden and Al-Qaeda and these others, they really focused on Islam being under attack. But I think what you're seeing now, the ISIS narrative is saying, okay, things are turning in our direction now. We are emerging, and our time has come. You know, and that, I think, is the clarion call that are bringing the banners in from around the globe.
All right, Scott, thanks so much for joining us. Again, Lieutenant Colonel Scott Mann. His website is StabilityInstitute.com. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Take care.
All the best. You too. Bye-bye.